when you see these special interest groups rushing out trying to lose cases in order to get before a friendly court. It really seems improbable as somebody who has actually tried cases and who's been around courtrooms a lot and who's seen a lot of litigation, a lot of great litigators. I have never seen anybody once try to lose a legitimate case. So in the wake of Justice Alito's signaling about what then became Friedrichs and Janus, to see these groups rush out and ask the court to rule against them so they can get hot foot up to the Supreme Court where they expect a good outcome, to me, that there's just something that doesn't seem right about that. That seems to me a little bit like faux litigation, that there's something else going on other than real parties having real arguments and the Supreme Court ultimately settling properly prepared real disputes.
20 hours, ladies and gentlemen. I listened to 20 hours of the Kavanaugh hearing. I didn't do it just sitting in my home, staring at the wall or effing around on my phone. I did it while I was driving around because I do a ton of driving. 20 hours! And I did it all for you. That's a lie. I did it for me because I'm an addict and this is my thing. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 265. I know that I was not here last week, and although I was not here, trust me, I was thinking about you, every single last one of you. So the Kavanaugh hearings, it's impossible to tell what's going to happen if he's going to make it to the Supreme Court. Odds are that he will, but odds were that Serena Williams was going to win the Grand Slam the other day. Vegas had 50-1 odds that she would lose. 50-1 odds. It seemed impossible, and yet she still lost. So when we're talking about Kavanaugh, let's not say that it's a done deal yet. When I hear the news talk about it, they talk about it like it's a done deal and that it's really just being dragged out. And they say, oh my God, why are the Democrats just dragging this out? There's a couple of reasons. And I want to mark this point in history by saying this. When we had an African-American president putting forth people that were qualified for federal court seats, and of course in the last year of his presidency, the Supreme Court, they held up so many of those seats. Mitch McConnell held up something in the neighborhood of 150 or 160 federal judgeships. Why? Because they wanted to get a Republican in there to fill them. If a Democrat gets in there, they won't even hear from those ones. Now, President Obama was able to put two people on the Supreme Court. But then when Scalia died in the final year of Obama's presidency with 11 months to go, absolutely not. The people should get to pick. The people did pick. But that's not really the issue. So fast forward to now. And these hearings begin with the Democrats saying there's all kinds of information that we do not have. There are hundreds of thousands of pages of information that we do not have that we've been asking for. Presidential Records Office said, we can't get you all those papers until the end of October. So hold off, please, at least until the end of October before you do the confirmation hearings. And the Republicans say, no, we're going to go forward with it right now because we don't care. We just want one of our ideological pricks on the court. That's the only thing that really matters to us. But the Democrats absolutely did their best trying to put off these hearings.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with my colleague, Senator Harris. Mr. Chairman, we received 42,000 documents that we haven't been able to review last night, and we believe this hearing should be postponed.
I know this is an exciting day for all of you here, and you're rightly proud of
the judge. Mr. Chairman, if we cannot be recognized, I move to adjourn.
The American people.
Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn.
Directly from Judge Kavanaugh.
We cannot possibly move forward, Mr. Chairman.
I extend a very warm.
What is the rush? What are we trying to hide by not having the documents out front?
Let the American people see. That's what they always say. Let the American people see. Show them the. Be transparent. Let the American people see. And now the Republicans are trying to hide things from the American people. And then there was a document dump. The day before the hearing started, there was a 40,000-page document dump. And it wasn't the stuff that the Democrats were looking for. But it was released just hours before the hearings. And then they said, hey, you can't dump 40,000 pages on us the night before. We don't read a 40,000-page book in one night. And then, of course, there's all these other documents that we are still looking for that the Republicans refuse to give up. When the Republicans refused to adjourn because they said, no, you have enough, the Republicans kept doing this selling point where they said, never in history have we ever had more information, more documents, more this, more that. Never have we had a more transparent process when it comes to a Supreme Court hearing than we've had with Kavanaugh. It's so transparent. You can see right through it. All the way through it, you can see for miles and miles and miles. What the hell is wrong with you Democrats? But they kept trying. And they said, No. You're not going to adjourn? We got some questions about why you refuse to adjourn.
Mr. Chairman, may I be recognized, sir?
Yeah, will you be the last one, or do you want to go on all afternoon?
I can't speak for my colleagues, but a lot of people I have a lot of respect for on this committee, especially some of the new folks. I just want to answer in the most plain spoken way I can possibly do. Is we're expected to evaluate a nominee who has a vast record. And if you look, and a lot of numbers have been cited, 10,000 here, 40,000 here, 100,000 here. But in the entire body of his record, sir, we've only have 10% of his record we've been able to evaluate. 90% of it has been withheld from senators, 90% of his record. So we're asking to evaluate a candidate, to have intelligent questions and insights into his record, but we only have 10% of that record. We can go on and on about the numbers of documents, 100,000, 10,000, but the fact is we are about to proceed with a historic hearing. We're about to proceed towards having a hearing on someone having a lifetime appointment on the most important court in the land that will effectuate so many of the areas of American life, from civil rights to women's rights to access to health care, all of this stuff is being decided. And we're going into this only having 10% access to 10% of the body of work of this man's career. That seems to me just common sense. 90% is missing right now. Just common sense says we should have access to thoroughly evaluate this person. We're not asking for anything out of the ordinary. Other candidates have come before. People can talk about tens of thousands here, 100,000 here, but we've gotten far more for every Supreme Court justice that has been mentioned here, far more than just 10%, just a scan a bit. My colleagues talk about what our duty to the American public is. Our duty to the American public is to evaluate a candidate on their body of work, but we're not even getting released that. And why? Because some political person, not a person who holds public office, not because... I mean, it's unprecedented to think that this committee has ceded its role to a partisan outside lawyer. And so here we're about to go forward with just 10% of this person's record to evaluate, to base our questions on, to investigate. 90% is being withheld. Just common sense would say that that's not fair. That's not right. It undermines our ability to do our job. It is just plain wrong.
Couple of things. First of all, the interruptions. The interruptions were absolutely insane. I heard probably at least 100 people get thrown out. I didn't get to watch these. I listened to them. And the other thing, the clips. So I listened to, there were 30 some hours of audio. I listened to about 20 hours of it. Hey, eventually at this point, at some point, this stuff just repeats itself. But out of the 20 hours that I listened to, I probably took the best 15 minutes of audio. So the clips in this first segment are going to be pretty long, but I want you to have this stuff in its full context. I can express to you with my commentary how I feel and where this is going and so on and so forth, but I really need you to hear the things that were happening at the time. You don't got to listen through all 20 or 30 hours. You can come right to Melvin. I got the best stuff for you right here. And here's the way the GOP responded. Democrats said, hey, we don't have these documents. Let's adjourn. Hey, he clearly not ready. Let's do this another time. Hey, what's the effing rush? And every time And by the way, every senator got 30 minutes, sometimes more than once, 30 minutes to just sit there and talk to the nominee. There were opening statements, and then they got 30 minutes to just talk to Kavanaugh. And every time a Republican, doesn't matter who it was, every time a Republican got the microphone and got the chance to talk to Kavanaugh, they would reach into their pants and they would touch themselves.
You served as a mentor to dozens of clerks and hundreds of law students, male and female. Your student, and some of whom did not share your philosophy. Your student reviews are off the charts, favorable, even by those who may not have completely agreed with your philosophical approaches on some matters. You volunteer in your community. Mr. Chairman, last order.
Yeah, just go ahead.
Okay, you volunteer in the community. You coach youth basketball. You're the sort of person many of us would like to have as a friend and a colleague. You also apparently like to eat pasta with ketchup. But nobody's perfect. Now, this being politics and this being a Supreme Court confirmation hearing, my Democratic colleagues actually I've got to admit my Democratic colleagues can admit that you're actually a good judge and a good person as well. They have to turn the volume up to 11 and try to paint you as one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Anyone who actually knows you knows that's ridiculous. And the American people will see soon enough that you are a smart, decent, normal person who just so happens to have been nominated to the highest court in our land. So here are the facts. Judge Kavanaugh is one of the most distinguished judges. Mr. Chairman, I think we ought to have this loudmouth removed.
Merrick Garland was also a smart, decent person. The Republicans did not particularly care for what the Democrats were doing, and they kept hammering them on it. Every time they get the mic, they would talk about how great Kavanaugh is and how those dang-gum Democrats just need to get over it. There was one point right before Senator Cruz talked, and I'm not going to play the ass-kissing questions that Senator Cruz posed to Kavanaugh, like, oh my God, you're so delicious. Honestly, Kavanaugh, you're going to have to wipe all of those senators' lips from your ass. All those GOP senators' lips from your ass before you sit down. Otherwise, you're going to crush their skulls when you sit down. But Senator Cruz, when he got the mic, the first thing that he did was thank the police. Thank you, police, for throwing out all of these disruptors.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Welcome back, Judge Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you again for your service. Before I get into questions, I just want to take a minute to recognize and thank the outstanding work at this hearing by the Capitol Police in terms of, in a calm and professional manner, dealing with the unfortunate disruptions we've seen and maintaining an environment where this hearing can focus on the record and substance of this nominee. And so thank you for the tremendous work that the men and women here are doing.
Mr. President, I think we'd like to second, and Senator Cruz, second that sentiment on our side as well.
Thanks, both of you, very much. I've expressed it to many of the policemen individually as I see them. Proceed.
And what you don't hear is after they got done thanking the police, Ted Cruz got his time started over. All right, you may now proceed with kissing Kavanaugh's ass. But there were serious moments. There were very serious moments. And when it comes to the national media, and I don't think the regular national media like CNN and all these, I don't think that they have a liberal or conservative bias. Certain ones do. Like Fox clearly has a political bias, but I don't think the regular news does. I think the regular news presents news in two ways. First of all, they don't want to step on the toes of those who buy advertising, and they don't want to lose access. So when they put these stories together, and they put these audio clips together, I think that's one of the first things that they think about, is they just want to make sure that they don't step on the toes of any of their corporate owners. The other thing they think about is they want to put the news together in a way where it's entertaining. You can do that, entertaining but informative. And more, it feels like the news, like the regular news, ABC, NBC, like they're putting together the news packages in a way that it speaks to, I want to put this diplomatically, less and less intelligent people. We don't get all the information. And I don't think that that's because they're so pro-Trump. I think the point is to get your eyeballs there to see the ads. And they don't really care if you understand the stories. So these are the things that were missed from the Kavanaugh hearing. So I've got a two-part one coming up here right now. And this senator just lays out, look, you're here not because you were picked by the president. You're here because you were picked by this, in effect, this secret society that takes money from gigantic corporations and billionaires. They picked you because they want you to be on the court. And why do they want you to be on the court? Because they know that you're going to give them everything that they want. Kennedy was a conservative vote. Yes, he was, but he wasn't reliably conservative. He didn't every single time. They want someone that's going to vote against people every single time.
So let's review the highlights reel. What do big Republican interests want? Well, first, they want to win elections. What has the Roberts Five delivered? Help Republicans gerrymander elections. Veith v. Jubilee, 5-4. License to gerrymander. Help Republicans keep minority voters away from the polls. Shelby County, 5-4, and Bartlett v. Strickland, 5-4, and Abbott v. Perez, 5-4, despite the trial judge finding the Texas legislature actually intended to target and suppress minority voters. And the big one, help corporate front group money flood elections. Big money interests love unlimited power to buy elections, lobby, and threaten and bully Congress. McCutcheon, 5-4, counting the concurrence. Bullock, 5-4, and the infamous, grotesque 5-4 Citizens United decision, which I believe stands beside Lochner on the court's roll of shame. What else do big influencers want? To get out of courtrooms. Big influencers hate courtrooms because they're lobbying and electioneering and threatening doesn't work, or at least it's not supposed to. In a courtroom, big influencers used to getting their way have to suffer the indignity of equal treatment. So the Roberts Five protects corporations from group class action lawsuits, Walmart v. Dukes, 5-4, Comcast, 5-4, and this past term, Epic Systems, 5-4. The Roberts Five helps corporations steer customers and workers away from courtrooms and into mandatory arbitration. Concepcion, Italian Colors, and Rent-A-Center, all Roberts Five. Epic Systems does double duty here because now workers can't even arbitrate their claims as a group. Hindering access to the courthouse for plaintiffs generally, Iqbal, 5-4. Protecting corporations from being taken to court by employees. Harmed through pay discrimination, Ledbetter, 5-4. Age discrimination, Gross, 5-4. Harassment, Vance, 5-4. And retaliation, Nassar, 5-4. Even insulating corporations from liability for international human rights violations, Jessner, 5-4. Corporations aren't in the Constitution. Juries are. Indeed, courtroom juries are the one element of American government designed to protect people against encroachments by private wealth and power. So, of course, the Roberts Five rules for wealthy, powerful corporations over jury rights every time, with nary a mention of the Seventh Amendment. What's another one? Oh, yeah, a classic, helping big business bust unions. Harris v. Quinn, 5-4, and Janice v. AFSCME this year, 5-4, overturning a 40-year precedent. Lots of big Republican influencers are polluters who like to pollute for free. So the Roberts Five delivers partisan decisions that let corporate polluters pollute. To pick a few, Rapanos weakening wetland protections 5-4. National Association of Home Builders weakening protections for endangered species 5-4. Michigan v. EPA helping air polluters 5-4. And in the face of emerging climate havoc, there's the procedurally aberrant 5-4 partisan decision to stop the EPA Clean Power Plan. Pattern. Then come Roberts' five bonus decisions advancing a far-right social agenda. Gonzalez v. Carhart upholding restrictive abortion laws. Hobby Lobby granting corporations religious rights over the health care rights of their employees. NIFLA letting states deny women truthful information about their reproductive choices. All 5-4, all Republican. Ad Heller and McDonald, which reanimated for the gun industry, a theory a former Chief Justice once called a fraud. Both decisions 5-4. This year, Trump v. Hawaii, 5-4, rubber stamping the Muslim travel ban. And in case Wall Street was feeling left out, helping insulate investment bankers from fraud claims, Janus Capital, 5-4. Pattern. No wonder the American people feel the game is rigged.
And that's the point. Get him on the court at all cost so that he can immediately and reliably begin voting against people every time. The Supreme Court should not be able to create law, but they can, and they do. The problem that conservatives have right now, if you look at the fact that Donald Trump is president despite losing by 3 million votes, that Texas, there's all kinds of talk about Texas turning purple. Texas. This deep red, reliably conservative state. And then, of course, gerrymandering. Conservatives are losing a lot of their gerrymandering cases around the nation. Even when it goes in front of conservative judges, they're still losing their cases because it's pretty clear that they're constantly tilting the playing field towards them. And sometimes it's not even just a tilt. It's a full turn. The changing demographics. The fact that the country is not as racist as they are, and the fact that the country realizes that this tax cut that they passed, right? They passed a $1 trillion tax cut for billionaires, and people realized damn near right away, crap, that wasn't for me. Doesn't matter. They're gonna pass another one, this time $2 trillion. They want to pass another one before the end of the year because they're pretty certain that they're going to lose power. So they want to make sure to pass another $1 trillion tax cut, which, by the way, that first tax cut, it's somewhere in the 30% approval range. People realize that it wasn't for them, that none of this has anything to do with them. Hate to use the phrase people are waking up, but I suppose, yeah, people are starting to wake up and realizing that this party has nothing for them. So what they need, what conservatives need, is to put these seats are permanent. Well, not permanent. They're lifetime appointments. Put Kavanaugh on the court. He'll be there 20, maybe 30 years. So him and all the other conservatives, I don't know how long Clarence Thomas has. I think he's got at least another 10 years on the court. So if Kavanaugh gets on the court, that's going to be 10 years. 10 years of reliably, deeply conservative, anti-people choices that are going to be on the Supreme. And what's going to happen is all of these. So Senator Graham made this comment. He says, it's not like, because Kavanaugh's clearly anti-abortion and wants to overturn Roe. That's what he wants to do. That's what's in his heart. You know, all corporations all the time. And of course, he wants to overturn Roe. And Senator Graham made this comment. He goes, well, it's not like they're going to be sitting around and going, hey, guys, what do you want to do today? You want to overturn Roe? All right, let's overturn Roe. All right, let's go to lunch. It's not that fast. And yeah, he's half true. He's half right. It's not that fast. They can't just walk in and go, let's overturn Roe. It's overturned. But here's what happens. The people on the court, they begin signaling to their corporate owners that, hey, if you bring this case before the court, we're going to give you whatever you want. And so what they do is they immediately just throw together these these cases, right, where they're not even ready to be brought to court. And the point is to take it into a lower court and have it overturned. They run out and they rush to lose cases so that they can then appeal to a higher court and a higher court, and eventually it'll get to the Supreme Court. They intentionally put together cases that they want to lose. They show up in court and they say, excuse me, judge, I want to lose this case. Can you rule against us? Yeah, sure, you freak. Knowing that it'll eventually get to the Supreme Court, and they're going to get exactly what they want from the conservative Supreme Court. There's no independence in that judiciary. So it's pointed out. They're going to run out, and they're going to get, and as soon as Kavanaugh gets on the court, the lower courts are going to be flooded with all these cases that they want to go in front of Kavanaugh, because Kavanaugh is going to give them exactly what they want.
Here's how the game works. Big business and partisan groups fund the Federalist Society, which picked Gorsuch and now you. As the White House counsel admitted, they insourced the Federalist Society for this selection. Exactly how the nominees were picked and who was in the room where it happened and who had a vote or a veto and what was said or promised, that's all a deep, dark secret. Then big business and partisan groups fund the Judicial Crisis Network, which runs dark money political campaigns to influence senators in confirmation votes, as they've done for Gorsuch and now for you. Who pays millions of dollars for that and what their expectations are is a deep, dark secret. These groups also fund Republican election campaigns with dark money and keep the identity of big donors a deep, dark secret. And of course, 90% of your documents are to us a deep, dark secret. Then once the nominee's on the court, the same business front groups with ties to the Koch brothers and other funders of the Republican political machine file friend of the court or amicus briefs to signal their wishes to the Roberts Five. Who is really behind those friends is another deep, dark secret. It has gotten so weird that Republican justices now even send hints back to big business interests about how they'd like to help them next. And then big business lawyers rush out to lose cases, just to rush up before the friendly court pronto. That's what happened in the Friedrichs Janus episode. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is the biggest corporate lobby of them all. For big coal, big oil, big tobacco, big pharma, big guns, you name it. And this year, with Justice Gorsuch riding with the Roberts Five, the chamber won 9 out of 10 cases it weighed in on. The Roberts Five, since 2006, has given the chamber more than 3/4 of their total votes. This year, in all civil cases, they voted for the chamber's position fully 90% of the time. And in these 5-4 cases I've highlighted, 100%. People are noticing. Veteran court watchers like Jeffrey Toobin, Linda Greenhouse, and Norm Ornstein described the court's service to Republican interest. Toobin wrote that on the Supreme Court, Roberts has served the interests of the contemporary Republican Party. Greenhouse has said the Republican-appointed majority is committed to harnessing the Supreme Court to an ideological agenda. Ornstein described the new reality of today's Supreme Court. It is polarized along partisan lines in a way that parallels other political institutions and the rest of society in a fashion we have never seen. And the American public knows it too. The American public thinks the Supreme Court treats corporations more favorably than individuals compared to vice versa by a 7-to-1 margin. 49% of Americans think corporations get special treatment there. Now let's look at where you fit in. A Republican political operative your whole career who's never tried a case. You made your political bones helping the salacious prosecution of President Clinton and leaking prosecution information to the press. As an operative in the second Bush White House, you cultivated relationships with political insiders like nomination guru Leonard Leo, the Federalist Society architect of your court nominations. On the D.C. Circuit, you gave more than 50 speeches to the Federalist Society. That looks like auditioning. On the D.C. circuit, you showed your readiness to join the Roberts Five with big political wins for Republican and corporate interests, unleashing special interest money into elections, protecting corporations from liability, helping polluters pollute, striking down common sense gun regulations, keeping injured plaintiffs out of court against corporations, and perhaps most important for the current occupant of the Oval Office, expounding a nearly limitless vision of presidential immunity from the law. Your alignment with right-wing groups who came before you as friends of the court, 91%. When big business trade associations weighed in, 76%. This, to me, is what corporate capture of the courts looks like. There are big expectations for you. The shadowy dark money front group, the Judicial Crisis Network, is spending tens of millions in dark money to push for your confirmation. They clearly have big expectations about how you'll rule on dark money. The NRA has poured millions into your confirmation, promising their members that you'll break the tie. They clearly have big expectations on how you'll vote on guns. White House counsel Don McGahn admitted, there is a coherent plan here where actually the judicial selection and the deregulatory effort are really the flip side of the same coin. Big polluters clearly have big expectations for you on their deregulatory effort. Finally, you come before us nominated by a president named in open court as directing criminal activity and a subject of ongoing criminal investigation. You displayed expansive views on executive immunity from the law. If you are in that seat, sir, because the White House has big expectations that you will protect the president from the due process of law, that should give every senator pause.
When it comes to gerrymandering, this is Republicans picking their voters. And when it comes to putting this guy on the high court, this is corporations picking their judges, picking people that they know are going to be friendly to them. This guy was picked by the Federalist Society. As you heard referenced there, the Judicial Crisis Network has dumped all kinds of money into ads, making sure that this guy, making sure that you call your senator and say, pick this guy who will rule against you. And then people are calling their senators and saying, hey, vote for this guy because I saw an ad on TV. Word about television, word about ads. Advertising, by its very nature, is propaganda. If somebody has the money to spend on an ad pushing for a Supreme Court judge, trust me, they do not have your best interest at hand.
In normal times, we would be here today to determine the fitness of a nominee to the Supreme Court of the United States, chosen for his or her legal talent and reputation for fairness. But these are not normal times. Instead, we are here to decide whether or not to rubber stamp Donald Trump's choice of a pre-selected political ideologue nominated precisely because he believes a sitting president should be shielded from civil lawsuits, criminal investigation, and prosecution, no matter the facts. Let's not forget, during his campaign, Donald Trump needed to shore up his support from the Republican base, who questioned whether he was sufficiently conservative. To help, he turned to the Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation to build a pre-approved list of names and promised to pick from among them when selecting nominees for the Supreme Court. These groups are long-standing right-wing organizations that advocate for conservative causes and legal positions. The Heritage Foundation focuses on developing policy to, among other things, oppose climate change, repeal the Affordable Care Act, and reduce regulations for big businesses. The Federalist Society focuses on changing the American legal system to align with an ultra-conservative interpretation of the Constitution, including the overturning of Roe v. Wade. When given the opportunity to nominate a new Supreme Court justice, Donald Trump did exactly as he promised. He did not select someone who demonstrates independence and fidelity to the rule of law. Instead, Donald Trump selected a pre-approved name in order to guarantee a fifth vote for his dangerous anti-worker, anti-consumer, anti-women, pro-corporate, and anti-environmental agenda. And Donald Trump selected Brett Kavanaugh from this list for an even more specific reason. The president is trying as hard as he can to protect himself from the independent, impartial, and a dogged investigation of his abuse of power before the walls close in on him entirely. Because if there's one thing we know about Donald Trump, it is that he is committed to self-preservation every minute, every hour, every day. Judge Kavanaugh's appointment should be considered in a broader context. The president has been packing our courts with ideologically driven judges who come to the bench with firm positions and clear agendas, who then go on to rule in ways consistent with those agendas. For example, Trump nominee James Ho, now a judge on the Fifth Circuit, has written in favor of unlimited campaign contributions and, in another case, publicly aired his personal views in opposition to abortion. Trump nominee Don Willett, now a judge on the Fifth Circuit, has already voted to curtail the independence of a federal agency that helped rescue the economy after the mortgage crisis of 2008. Trump nominee Stephen Bibos, now a judge on the Third Circuit, wrote a dissent to explain that he does not believe Title IX requires school districts to provide transgender students appropriate changing facilities and bathrooms. Trump nominee Amy Coney Barrett, now a judge on the Seventh Circuit, ruled to keep out of court employees trying to challenge an arbitration proceeding and cast the deciding vote to allow a business to continue to segregate its workforce. And Trump nominee John K. Bush, now a judge on the Sixth Circuit, ruled to keep out of court a woman accusing her employer of age discrimination, despite a dissenting judge's view that there was sufficient evidence to go forward. When these Trump-nominated judges came before this Judiciary Committee as nominees, my Democratic colleagues and I tried to find out how they would go about deciding tough cases, what they would base their decisions on when the law did not give a clear enough direction, as is often the case. And time and again, we were told, don't worry about my personal background or my history as a partisan political advocate. Don't worry about what I've done, written, or said until now. When I get on the bench, I'll just follow the law. But clearly, they have not. Why should we expect this Supreme Court nominee, you, to be any different?
I'm giving a lot of time to this today because I want you to understand the gravity of what happens if this gentleman gets on the court. There has been something that has come up. He was already supposed to have been voted on, because what they do is they vote him out of committee, send him to the full Senate votes on him, and then to the court or not to the court. But Dianne Feinstein got a letter this week from somebody accusing him of attempted rape in high school. And who knows when it comes to this particular accusation, what's what. But the woman has decided to remain anonymous, and I know why. Because if she comes forward, whether what she says is true or not, whether it's legitimate or not, she will be eviscerated by not just the conservative media, Limbaugh and Hannity and Fox News, but she will be eviscerated by the very corporations that need Kavanaugh on the court. I'm sorry, honey, you almost got raped. Well, you're now putting your hands into our deep corporate pockets, and they will destroy her. So already not a lot of credibility is being given to her. But nobody brings these things up. Nobody says these things because they're just looking for attention. I believe that Kavanaugh did this. And of course, he's in deep denial. It's never happened. It very likely did happen. And it points out that the conservatives don't really care about this kind of thing. They got their corporate donors and they're going to put their guy on the court no matter what. So what can we do about this? First of all, if I'm not mistaken, the Democrats are united against this particular candidate. The Republicans are united for, which means that it's incredibly likely that he will get on the court. But there's the X factor of two. The two female senators who have said that anybody that votes against, that says they're going to vote against Roe, should not be on the Supreme Court. They've said that for years. Murkowski and Collins have said that for years. But if those two votes drop off, then that's it. this person will not get on the court. But even though they said that in the past, even though they said in the past that they don't want to put someone on the court that will overturn Roe, they're now signaling that they're going to vote for him just the same. So it was all lost. It would seem that all is lost, and this guy's going to get on the court, and we're going to have 10, 20 years of strict 100% anti-people, pro-corporate rule. What can we do, Melvin, if he gets on the court? First of all, we're going to fight like hell to see that he does not get on the court. And then if he does get on the court, well, we're just going to fight like hell to make sure that this anti-person, pro-corporate court does not hold power. The phrase court packing was used in one of those previous clips. What is court packing? That's where you add seats to the Supreme Court. Can you do this? Yes. A president can add seats to the Supreme Court. They can add or take away seats. So they could add, a Democratic president could, when they came in, if they wanted to, and we've done this dozens of times on the court. It hasn't happened recently, but it doesn't mean that it can't happen now. A Democratic president could come in and say this 5-4 split that they have is now going to be a, what would that be? So it'd be 5-4, so it'd be like 5-6. He could say, I'm going to add two more seats to the court, make the panel from 9 to 11, and then it's going to be a 6-5 Supreme Court, and that's now the Supreme Court. Yes, they could do that. But first of all, you're going to need a Democratic president. Second of all, you're going to need a Congress that's going to be willing to work with that president. And in these times of the deep tribalism that we have, you're not going to get that from Republicans. They're not going to work with a Democratic president. There's always at least a handful of Democrats that are willing to work with Republicans. Hell, Chuck Schumer wanted to give Trump his effing money for the wall. So there's always going to be Democrats that are willing to work with Republicans, but not the other way. This is deep, deep tribalism. When it comes to the Republican Party, by their own admission, the most important thing to them should be to be Christian. What does that mean? That means to be Christ-like. Melvin, what the hell does that mean? Matthew 25 Christians. That's what I refer to them as. Melvin, I don't think they even read the Bible, Melvin. I don't think they know what you're talking about. Oh no, they know what I'm talking about. And I know that because Brett Kavanaugh said it himself when he was being questioned this week. Kavanaugh specifically brought up Matthew 25.
When you're at, I said I'm a Matthew 25, try to follow the lesson of serving the least fortunate among us. You know, when I was hungry, you gave me food, thirsty, you gave me drink, stranger, and you welcomed me, naked, and you clothed me, sick, and you cared for me, in prison, and you visited me. Six groups that's not exclusive, but that's a good place to start with your charitable works in your private time.
And there it is. Clearly they're aware of Matthew 25. He said it right there. Right in your charitable works, you clothed me, you fed me. But of course, it's all lip service. That's what they say. That's what they say to get him on the court. I know that these are rough times, especially when it comes to the Supreme Court, because they have taken all this power upon themselves, and they can now, they want this permanent majority on the Supreme Court, because if they lose the House, if they lose the Senate, if they lose the presidency, they're still going to have a permanent majority or a semi-permanent majority on the court, giving them exactly what they want, even in years when the Republicans are not in power. Melvin, is all lost. No, it is not all lost. It's never all lost. This is your time to shine, kids. Keep up the fight. Let's see. Make sure that Kavanaugh does not get on the Supreme Court. No more white hooded judges.
Right, Ralph, I have a question for you. I know you watched last night. I want to know, what were you saying to the TV as the president was speaking? What was your commentary as this, as the president's speech unfolded?
Well, first of all, he keeps speaking about we can't give in to our fears. You know, don't be afraid. Look, Mr. President, we're not afraid. We're angry. We're pissed off. We're furious.
Yes.
We want you to react. We want you to do something. You're afraid. I mean, this guy is such a total pussy. It's stunning.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters. Sir! This guy is as awful as he sounds. A hardcore conservative ex-military man, advisor to so-and-so and such-and-such. He's got this, and Fox, he was a constant face on Fox. And when he said that a couple years ago about President Obama, that Obama's a total, you heard what he said, not going to repeat it, total P-word. He became this, you know, he was already very popular on Fox News, but he just became this Goliath on Fox. I can't tell you how many times I'd stay in a hotel room. I'd flip on the telly, and whenever I go to hotels, I always watch Fox. I think I've mentioned that before. And I would see, effing hell, Colonel Peters again? Does he really have anything to say? But the reason they had him on was he was reliably conservative. That's the first part. But also a good, reliable conservative a-hole. Like a full-blown... So he's on with Stuart Varney in that clip. And Stuart Varney, because... And they're talking to Fox bots out there. What were you saying to your TV, Colonel Peters? Lieutenant Colonel Peters, what were you saying to your TV? Because they know the Fox bots at home are always yelling at their televisions. And so this makes Lieutenant Colonel Peters relatable to the Fox News watcher. What were you yelling at your TV? Hey, I'm at home. I watch Fox News. I yell at my TV too. And it's ridiculous. But something funny happened a little while back. Colonel Peters was no longer on Fox News. What? Where did he go? And then Lieutenant Colonel Peters popped up again. And he popped up in a very unexpected place. He popped up on CNN in an interview. And they go, hey, welcome to CNN. You don't work for Fox anymore. Why don't you work for Fox? And he goes, well, the Trump presidency is just a bridge too far.
This is a distinctly un-American president who really doesn't seem to like America very much, certainly doesn't respect it. And he's a president who appears to be enthralled to a foreign power, a hostile foreign power. I mean, this is unbelievable to me. I could never have foreseen this. I was a pretty good analyst, made a lot more good calls than bad calls. I never could have foreseen this, to use a cliched word, this Orwellian situation.
But Lieutenant Colonel Peters, you have to understand that you, as a commentator on Fox's, he made a lot more good calls than bad calls. Yeah, he's being charitable to himself, and he should get to do that. But no, he didn't. And these complaints that he had about Obama, he doesn't seem to have anymore, because he was one of the people instrumental in the propaganda machine that helped bring this particular guy to office. What happens on Fox News specifically? I've always said that if there were a sort of a liberal Fox News, you know, that where they just all they did was lied and gave the progressive perspective all the time, I still wouldn't watch, because I don't want to be lied to. Two, I don't want to live in a bubble. Three, I don't want to be embarrassed because I'm effing stupid. I want all of the information, no matter how good or bad it is. I want all the information, please. I'm a grown-up. I can take it. But the people that watch Fox News are not grown-ups, and they cannot take it. The fear center of their brain, and we know this from science, is larger than just about any other part of their brain. They have a massive fear center in their brain. They're afraid of everything. And they have this warm, cuddly place, you know, where they can put their hands in front of the warm fire and they can cuddle up, and they only hear what they want to hear. And Lieutenant Colonel Peters, for so many years, was that very cuddly blanket in front of that conservative fireplace where they could hear only the things that they wanted to hear.
How much do you blame your former network, Fox News? You have called it a destructive propaganda machine when you resigned earlier this year. Are they partly at fault for propping up Trump?
Well, certainly they're, of course. I mean, I left Fox because as a former military officer who took an oath to the Constitution, I could not be part of a channel that, to me, was assaulting the Constitution, the constitutional order, the rule of law. But that said, Fox isn't immoral, it's amoral. It was opportunistic. Trump was just a gift to Fox, and Fox, in turn, is a gift to Trump. And it, as you observed earlier, it's a closed loop. And so people that only listen to Fox have an utterly skewed view of reality.
He hasn't just left Fox. He's going full anti-Fox. He goes, whoa, whoa, whoa. What they're doing over there, yikes. Despite the fact that he made a gang of money, these people are paid for their appearances. Every so often, folks will go on, you know, to MSNBC or NBC or Fox or any of these, and they, you know, they'll just do it because, hey. But most of the time, they get cut a good-sized check in the mail. Some of these appearances on Fox News, they're not just paid, $50, $100, you know, they're paid a couple thousand dollars per appearance when they go on Fox News. And Lieutenant Colonel Peters was one of these people that just made a gang of money because he was willing to sell his soul. And this guy's not a hero of mine now, but what happened was he goes on Fox. He helps push the propaganda. He helps push the lies. And then somebody gets in there that is just way too whoa for Lieutenant Colonel Peters. And now he's trying to sound the alarm. Peters isn't going to become a hero of mine. I still think he's gross. And I still hate his guts. And I still think that he's just absolutely opportunistic. But I am bathing, absolutely bathing in hearing him say these things about people on Fox News, knowing that over there where he used to be a hero, oh my God, I'm sure they just want his head on a pike now.
The Republican Party's gone, or at least it's dormant. What we see now, the people supporting Trump are radicals, these couch potato anarchists. They're people that don't have a program to make America great again. And by the way, America's great right now. Rather, they're destructive. They want to tear things down. They want vengeance. And Trump is brilliant at that. He's done what autocrats and charlatans and false messiahs throughout history have done. He's told his core supporters, you are not to blame. You're not to blame for the mistakes you made. You're not to blame for your failures. It's them. It's the minorities.
Fault.
It's the immigrants.
It's the deep state's
fault. Fake news.
It's a deep state. It's a
Everybody
very compelling story.
Fault.
It's a really compelling story.
Oh my God, he's giving away the playbook. What is he doing? Colonel Peters, Lieutenant Colonel Peters. Good for him. He's defecting. He's gotten away from it. He's not going to spread lies anymore. But you know what you did, Colonel Peters? Is the damage that you did, like any of these other conservatives that go on Fox and are willing to lie. One went on Fox recently and said something that he wants to crush Obama's head or something like that, which of course he'll get a visit from the Secret Service because ex-President Obama still has Secret Service protection. But when they go on Fox News, they do this irreparable damage. Now, they're not all going to have this, I suppose, for lack of a better phrase, come to Jesus moment. But more and more of them are. And I think Lieutenant Colonel Peters is just the first of many that are now realizing the irreparable damage that they caused as not just a conservative commentator, but as a conservative commentator willing to go on a propagandist network. And they're looking back now and they're seeing the damage that they left in their own wake. And they're trying to signal to the rest of America, holy crap, we're really sorry that we did this. Although he's not directly apologizing, he's saying this should have never happened. But hey, you're going to have to deal with that on your own, Lieutenant Colonel Peters, and the damage that you caused, the damage that so many of these outlets that are willing to go on and lie have caused. They're going to lose more and more people because it has now finally hit a point where we have a white supremacist president. You know, where America is not a place that welcomes immigrants anymore, where we are not seen as the shining light in the world or any of these other things that people like to say.
Ralph, do you think your former colleagues at Fox are proud of their performance?
The polite word is prostitutes. So we'll just leave it at that. I don't want to be the go-to guy for Fox bashing forever. But what Fox is doing is causing real harm to our country right now.
Oh, I enjoyed this segment of the show way too much. So what is our takeaway from today? Well, first of all, the Supreme Court. This fight that's going on right now is not over. And even if Kavanaugh makes it to the Supreme Court, guess what? At that point, it is still not over. And when it comes to the people that have done horrible, irreparable damage to the country by joining in on the propagandist network, both on television and in writing, even they are having their moments now where they're going, you know what? This is too much, too far, not normal. I'm now Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters, and I'm part of the resistance. Well, he's not really, and he's not directly apologizing. But hey, this is a good first step. I don't expect Hannity and Limbaugh to have that moment anytime soon or ever. Pretty sure they're going to take their lives directly to the grave because they're being paid by the big polluting industries and by these large multinational corporations and by these foreign governments to say the things that they say that continue to cause damage. But look, if we keep going, slow and steady wins the race. We keep the same message. We just point out what's really going on. Even somebody as hardcore as Lieutenant Colonel Peters is going to eventually come around and go, crap, you guys were right the whole time. Oopsie poopsie, my bad. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being on the Fire You Can't Put Out, our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. You can like us at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go, just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or a Google Play for Android users. Individual episodes are available at the iTunes Store. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can subscribe so you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, or hate mail, just send them to me, tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are The Fire You Can't Put Out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity, rejecting Kavanaugh in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin. Signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.